welcome to our AA meeting for Planet FM 104.6. My name is Sally and I am an alcoholic and I will be chairing our meeting this morning. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Today, our speakers are Fraser, Sue and Denise, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. And this morning, I'm going to get Fraser to start off our sharing.
Cool. Thank you, Sally. My name's Fraser and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is the 6th of the 7th, 2001, which makes me just over 22 years sober. Which you'd think would make me sane, but it doesn't always. I had a lovely little moment yesterday afternoon. My daughter, who is 18, who has never seen me drunk, is down in Dunedin at the moment, and she's looking through the university in the hostel, and she found a photo from 1993 of the hostel that I was in, Cumberland House. And she said, "Where are you, Dad?" And she sent it through via text. And I found myself and I was in a ball suit with a girl hanging off my neck, and I'm pissed, clearly. And it's sort of early and it's sort of about 10 o'clock in the morning. And she said, "Dad, why are you wearing a ball suit?" And I said, "Because I'd been on a binge for about 3 weeks." And I said, "And that's where I got the burn on my back." And she said, "Oh, the burn on your back." And she said, "How did you get that?" And I said, "I fell asleep drunk on the on a heater, passed out in a hallway." And it's nice to be reminded of those moments. You know, my introduction to alcohol occurred, like many of us, at a very early age. But my folks weren't alcoholics. There was a lot of alcohol in the house. But, you know, my very first memory of alcohol was as a young boy sitting on my father's knee, you know, slurping his beer after work. You know, I didn't just have a sip. I'm 4 or 5 years old. I would gulp it. I have another childhood memory. My mother used to have a decanter of port with goblets, you know, for special occasions. And I'd come home from school as sort of 7 or 8 year old and make myself a peanut butter sandwich and pour myself a goblet of port and sit there and watch Scooby-Doo drinking port, you know, thinking nothing of it. So alcohol and my upbringing was just part and parcel, but I can say hand on heart, I wasn't a complete train wreck initially with my boozing. You know, as a teenager I started, like many of us, you know, in my early teens, but not, you know, wasn't problematic. I was a keen sportsman and you know, had school and all the rest of it. But the age of 17, my father was killed in an accident, quite obviously very suddenly. And I went from almost overnight a drinker, and not even a problem drinker, to a blackout alcoholic drinker. I was DIC'd at 17, you know, 6 weeks later for the first time. And then it just went downhill from there. You know, and I was blackout drunk, headed to university, smashed another car up, got DIC'd again. You know, this is all, you know, 17, 18 years old. I was a vandal. I would smash, you know, smash buildings up and abuse people. And my nickname in my first year at university was Alky, and I hated it. I hated it. But it was, I hated it because they were right. I pushed on, felt too young to give up, and went to London and found, you know, I found a way to moderate my drinking, which was via cocaine and ecstasy. You know, that was my legitimate foil for booze, was why don't I just do some more hardcore narcotics to moderate my drinking? And invariably what happened is it wasn't enough. And so initially I'd say, well, I'll just do some coke and E, and then I'll add some tequila back into the mix. And then it was, you know, so it was just a mess. My last drunk was not my worst drunk. It was midwinter, you know, 2001, but it was a combination of, or a culmination of, just an ongoing treadmill of, you know, drink for no other reason and blackout. There wasn't a special occasion. It was just drink, get drunk, smash something up. I'd got to the stage where I realised I couldn't handle the ups and downs. So my focus was, I thought, well, if you drank every day and kept yourself topped up, you wouldn't have these blackouts and hangovers. So that was my decision. But my last drunk, I was heading home on the ferry. A couple of girls from work said, come and have a drink, because I'd missed the ferry. I said, oh, one drink won't hurt. I blacked out after one drink. I woke up, or came to from the blackout, about two in the morning, and still in the viaduct. And I had a moment of clarity. There was a glass mirror behind the bar, and I sort of came to and I saw a reflection of myself, cigarette in one hand, bourbon in the other, and I said, how did I get here? Blacked out again, woke up the next morning, and this is important for me, because I, in terms of believing in God and a higher power, I was definitely, you know, very much on the fence and probably sort of rubbish that idea. But I always believed that my father was the angel looking down on me. I really did feel that. And that morning, I went into work and I lay on the toilet floor of work, and I said to my father in heaven, in my mind, I need help. And with that, I felt comfort and strength to pick up the phone. I rang my partner and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic and I need to call AA. And I rang AA, and I'll finish on this. There was a chap there. I rang the service centre and I said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, I'm too young, but here's my story. And I told him my story, and he said, Fraser, he said, it's not what you drink, it's not where you drink, it's not who you drink with, it's what happens to you when you drink that dictates whether or not you have a problem with alcohol. And he said, and my friend, you sound like you have a problem with alcohol. There is an AA meeting Friday night, Belmont. You may wish to attend. His name was Frank the Yank, by all accounts. And I got to my first meeting, and the rest is history. I listened in that first meeting. No one talked about their boozing. All they ever talked about was what it was like in their head. And it was the only thing that ever relieved a hangover in my life. I keep coming back. So thank you, Sally.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us this morning, Fraser. I would now like to invite Sue to share with us.
Hi, I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 24th of August 2003, so I'm just over 1 year sober. It's been an incredible year. I'll I'll start with a bit of my story about where I came from. I picked up a drink. Well, my first drink would have been very young, but the first time I picked up a drink and realised that there was something different about me would have been 13. And although I don't remember all the details, I just remember taking a sip of this alcohol, and I don't even remember what it was. It was some brown liquid from Mum and Dad's cabinet. And it made me feel so different. It made me feel warm. It made me feel like I was on top of the world. It made me feel accepted. It almost fixed the scrambled thoughts in my head and made them flow freely. And from then, my alcohol consumption, whether it be by myself or with friends, out at parties or just with friends, just went crazy. I was suffering at the same time with an eating disorder that went from bad to worse as well, and the two for me were very much intertwined. It feels to me that they were the same disease, the holism disease that I've heard of since I've been in these rooms. And both of those things helped me at that time get through my teenage years and then my 20s through my children and into where I am now, which is 50. So, yeah, the drinking went from bad to worse. I never, I heard lots of stories when I came in about people ending up in jail and people ending up in a lot of rehabs. That didn't happen to me. My pain was all in my head and my body. I ended up getting very sick towards the end with physical sickness. But it was more or less, it was more what I did, what I felt in my head. And it was very, very sick. Towards the end of my drinking, it took me straight to suicide attempts nearly every time. I was blacking out. I did get one DIC. I did lose one job, but that was not because of the drinking. That was because of my behaviour due to the drinking. And my relationships were suffering. I was sneaky. I would do anything to get alcohol, whether it be steal, lie, hide. My behaviour was atrocious, and people were starting to realise that there was something really, really, really wrong with me. And the night that I had COVID, and I drank right through COVID. My COVID was quite a bad version. I picked it up when I was overseas, and I got back, and I realised one night that this is crazy. Most normal people would not be drinking and blacking out every night when they had COVID. And I'd spoken to a few people that I knew that had been in AA, and in the morning, over those coming days, I knew that there was something, I had to do something. My kids were talking to me about my alcoholism. My family was talking to me. I was hiding from friends at that stage, so they didn't even know. But I woke up that morning after having a big, big night of alcohol and just had that dread. I had the dread that I've heard so many other people in the rooms talk about, the hatred, and just knew that if I was to keep going doing this, I wasn't going to be alive much longer. So I called a friend in the program who I hadn't spoken to for years, but I did know through other people that she had been sober 6 years. And I called her and said, I really need help. And that was before I really told anyone in my family. I just called her because I knew that she would help. And she helped me get along to some meetings. And I knew as soon as I walked in, even though that there were so many people that were so different to me, I knew and felt that I belonged there. And I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it because, you know, there's not many places in my life that I've been that I've felt like I've belonged. And this is, you know, it's an integral part of my recovery. I've learned how to trust people again. You know, I've had a sponsor right from the start with 15 years sobriety, and she's so strong. And I've learnt to trust her and do whatever she tells me. And if she told me to jump off a bridge, I would jump off a bridge, because everything that she has told me to do has brought me closer to a higher power, which incidentally I didn't believe in when I came into the program either. That's been a new thing that's happened over the last year. And I've learnt how to be honest. And for me, learning how to be honest is a feeling of freedom, you know, and that's what the program's given me. So, yeah, it's given me back my relationships. It's given me some beautiful friendships that I would never have developed. My brain is starting to work. You know, I do a job where I really need my brain. I work with numbers all day, and that was suffering. I was making huge mistakes, and now I'm doing really well. And that's all thanks to the program and God and the people in it. So I'm really, really grateful to be here. Thank you for having me, Sally.
Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning, Sue. I would now like to invite Denise to share with us. Over to you, Denise.
Thanks, Sally. I'm Denise. I'm an alcoholic. I'm just going to talk about my experience, strength and hope. Growing up, I was capable and adaptable. I went to a Catholic school, which suited my extrovert and intuitive personality. I wasn't highly intentioned. In other words, I was vague, nor was I agenda-driven. And in other words, I was bored easily. Then, as I moved into the real world, I had to work extra hard to get things done. Concentrating and expressing myself was really hard, so I started to think introvertedly, which gave me a penchant for philosophising. But this didn't always go down well with the more pedestrian of folks that often ruled my world. So I grew an agenda that sought to avoid boredom and cover up pain from my hurt feelings. And I used alcohol. Alcohol helped that. Then I developed a fear of missing out, FOMO, and did things to be involved and get noticed. So drinking and social behaviour that came with that enabled me to be noticed and get ahead in the world that I had to belong to, but that I didn't understand nor that I felt comfortable in. So my finding AA was like the disease, progressive and slow. I came to AA late, and obsession with alcohol was insane. I craved it, and I would go to any lengths to find it. I needed to get sober to take action and to stay in the program. And I have heard that if we are willing to become sober in AA, I think it's really important that we understand that this is not a disease of thinking, it's a disease of the soul, and it's a disease of the heart. And I had experience of that. And we have to realise that to be able to work the steps of the program, we need to be able to be in the program and be in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't work if you don't put your heart and mind and soul into it. And if you don't do that work, you leave the outcome to your own chances. And I learnt that. I was fortunate in that I had a brilliant first sponsor. I got her from a learned man who was a customer of mine in the real world in one of my jobs. Actually, it was a job I was extremely happy in, but by this time, alcohol had become an obsession. I only kept that job because my boss had no sense of smell, so that part was really funny and curious to me. However, I knew enough, and I was getting help from the health system yet again, and they suggested AA. My customer happened to be at that very first meeting, and he sent some women to carry the message to me. I'd gone in disguise, blaming my sister for being the alcoholic. So when I was at the meeting and I saw him, I quickly said, "Oh, this is my sister, she's an alcoholic." He saw through it. So The happiest part of this is that they were women willing to be who they were. I was just trying to be who I was, and so I saw this in their surrender and acceptance, that it was okay to be a woman alcoholic. And thus my journey in AA truly began with their support. I hear it said that we have the keys to wisdom if we want to take them. If you know anything at all about the history of AA, you will know that this organisation was created perhaps by a higher power. It was said that Bill Wilson was not a person of great character until he got sober. Once he got sober, he started doing the right things. I believe he had this experience in a hospital and it changed his heart and his soul. He began to understand things, and he saw where trouble can be and how it could come along. He wrote the Big Book, which for me is a really easy way of digesting the fellowship. I think, you know, I always say I had physical and incomprehensible demoralization, pain. I became alcoholic when I was 17. I knew I was an alcoholic. By the time I was 50, I was so obviously needing to stop. I'd been a progressive drinker. By 36, I was living and drinking very manageably. Alcohol was all around me, and the lifestyle I had allowed to come into being on purpose was beginning to have an addictive edge to it. Looking back on occasion, as I do in this program, I see very clearly that I kept the enabling aspects very close so I could control my entry every day into alcohol use. I was a daily user of substances, and they became on the extreme end of the spectrum. I had thought it was normal to drink, but then I added other addictions. Normal to be more or less always drunk? I didn't want any sort of power over alcohol in the sense that I wanted to take any sort of inventory of my behaviour. It was a power greater than myself. I went to any lengths to have alcohol. Because I had a great, easily understood sponsor, I could listen and respond to the program. My complacency is based on not letting go for me. It's thinking I can still run the show. To me, this is an action program. I know I am a real alcoholic and that I couldn't stop. I didn't choose alcoholic drinking. Alcohol dictated to me. Nothing could deter me. Alcohol and its lifestyle chose me, I feel. But maybe to carry the message to other alcoholics. But for now, I also know that I have a particular personality type, and now I'm okay knowing this. I have heard this acronym ODAP, our devilish alcoholic personalities. For me, understanding this has given me the acceptance that I'm okay being this type of personality. And the fellowship has been amazing for this, as I've met other similar persons whose stories at one time or another are my stories. I often drank out of frustration because people would say they didn't understand my thinking. I was critiqued on my way of doing things often, but now I see that I've found my peeps in the rooms. I love being around the sharing. It's very good for me. I always hear something from a meeting, and that can be my spiritual guide for the day. I try to get to a meeting every day. Today I heard someone say that another AA member's admission of being triggered was reminding them to put a stake in the ground. I love hearing that sort of honesty. I don't like to keep secrets. I try to reach out. It works when I do it. Being triggered is just life on life's terms, and it is admitting my powerlessness when I reach out to another alcoholic. I'm now not tempted to drink, as I hear enough to know that drink is a little devil sitting on my shoulder. I was gifted the AA fellowship, and I'm not triggered to pack up and leave. My alcoholism is always transforming. As I reach milestones, I'm not so much triggered to drink. Because that self-harm is too direct, it's maybe a route to suicide in all the streams of misery in my drinking behaviour. I have been fearing relapse over the last couple of years. Strength. My freedom came to me when I realised I had nowhere to go but stay in the program. That's it. I like to be positive. I don't respond well to negative self-talk. I didn't question my sanity because I was sure enough this path was as progressive as my pathway down into full-blown alcoholism. Suicide looked like a really sensible idea because of the false courage and foolhardiness that the effect of the mind-altering substance of alcohol had on me. But I had a family, children, relationships, career, and now I have a grandson. I could not let those mean, doubting, critical people, yes, it's always someone else's fault, situations, institutions and places wear me down without my acceptance as I was an alcoholic and I had done all I could to overcome it. My rock bottom was it, and the only way out was up. I knew intuitively that this realisation that I could, in spite of myself, act responsibly, and as the Toronto Declaration says, I am responsible for carrying the message, and this gives me my purpose. Hope. I'm now focused on living my day life today and what I do with my life. This program means I have a choice, and my choice is to live life at the spiritual level. I envelop the fellowship as a form of prayer, and I have a connection with what is known in the fellowship as God, or to many their higher power. When I first entered AA, I kept trying to look outside for what I felt was my problem and why I drank. Now I look outside so that I can reach within. I can follow the 12 steps and connect with my spirit. People, places, institutions and things can be understood when I have a spiritual connection, and I can hand over, surrender and accept that what will be in God's time, and it will be one day at a time. I'm able to quiet the mind and pause. Growth continues, and the way I live my life becomes easier. There is a solution, as quoted, and I stand by this, a world beyond our wildest dreams. As in the fog and sickness of alcoholism, nothing ever could match my life in sobriety.
Thank you, Denise. So great to have you here this morning. Well, that's all the time we have. So a massive thank you to Fraser, Sue and Denise for sharing with us this morning. And a reminder that we are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. So tune in to Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly regarding AA, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the AA website and you'll be able to find a meeting in your local area. We will now close our meeting this morning with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Is on the edge of no tomorrow. Oh, baby, we should make the most of the unknown. If the sun's gonna go supernova and a time on Earth is over, everything that we have gathered even matter at all. Fire down, keep that
keep down.